Breakups and divorce can be extremely painful, lonely, and confusing. But I believe your breakup can be your biggest breakthrough. I'm Lindsay Ellison, author, coach, speaker, and single mom of two awesome young men. Welcome to a podcast about finding joy and inner peace after a breakup. You may not be able to see what's on the other side yet, but I promise if you do the healing work, your life will transform in ways you never thought possible. Welcome to Unbreakable You. I will never forget that day when I was at my lowest place. My life was falling apart, my marriage was falling apart, and my mental health was at its most fragile state, that the only place I wanted to go to was heaven. Life was so unmanageable, and I wanted to end it because I didn't know how to get out of the pain alive. Maybe you've been here too, or maybe you're here right now, or maybe you're teetering on the edge that even the slightest trigger will throw you off of it. Well, my guest today has been exactly at that point, where he was in his car, pulled off to the side of the road with a gun to his mouth because he thought he had nowhere else to go. But something made him not pull the trigger, something larger than himself, a voice that spoke to him, that offered him another way. So today I'm talking with George Kalantzis. He is a combat veteran, a podcast host, and author of his book, Nowhere to Go. And he shares his rise from overcoming a suicide attempt to finding a life of meaning, inspiration, and empowerment. Myself, George, and so many others have been in this dark place, and we are living proof that you can overcome any struggle that comes your way and that there is always a place to go, even when you are convinced that there isn't. Well, hey there, George. Welcome to the show.
Hey, welcome. I'm stoked we got to do this. Let's get into it. How are we doing?
Oh, I'm good for a Monday. We always do my recordings on Monday, so not so bad. How are you?
Yeah, it's a great day. Beautiful summertime here. Just finished up hiking and yeah, I'm excited to start the day with you.
I'm jealous. Well, I would love to kind of dive in and just have my audience get to know you a little bit. And I would love to know how you got started and what this whole nowhere to go means. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, it all starts with a story, right? Like all of us. So it started way back when, actually about a little over 30 years ago for me, I'm 38. And the first story of never feeling like enough came from when I was 6 years old in the middle of my parents' divorce. I remember being a little boy riding home from school about to show my friends like Nintendo. I was like the only kid on the block who had this NES, original Nintendo, Mario and Luigi. I'm dating myself here.
Oh, yeah. No, I played them.
And so I'm riding home. And next thing I know, as we're getting closer to to our house, like there's things being thrown out the window, people yelling and all the stuff. And so like right there, my little hopes are shut down. Next thing I knew, men were coming to our house, taking over our things. And then my dad had pulled me aside and just told me to grow up and be a man. So I'm 6 years old being told to be a man. I don't even know how to be a kid. I don't even know how to be a man at 38. Like, what does this even mean? Right. So my whole entire life was this story of not feeling enough and trying to prove myself worthy of being a man. So I had to find this without really any guidance. The only guidance I saw from my dad was he worked really hard and was never around. My mom was never around. So I had to fend for myself as a kid. My family is a traditional Greek family, restaurants and things like that. So I grew up in a restaurant at a very young age, didn't play sports, really developed a hard work ethic, still not feeling enough. And so when I got into high school, I got into a lot of trouble. You know, things weren't rolling out well, drugs, alcohol, and I ended up joining the Marine Corps right before 9/11. But because 9/11 didn't hit yet, they said, you can't join the Marines if you don't graduate. And I'm like, oh, I got a problem here. I got to figure out how to graduate. Nothing could happen. There was no way I was going to graduate. And then 9/11 hit and the recruiters walked into the office with me and said, hey, this kid wants to join the Marines. We have to work out a plan. So we worked out a plan to graduate. I went to detention morning and evening, stayed to class all day, doubled up, went on weekends, did whatever I had to do, graduated, became a United States Marine, 2002.
Wow.
Did 10 years in the Marine Corps, traveled the world, saw a lot of death, lost my best friend to combat. And that whole entire time, still, no matter what I was doing, I never felt like I was good enough. I always had to prove myself worthy. So I had trouble with leadership, things like that. I was honorably discharged, did a great things. But when I got out after 10 years, here's where the big punchline comes in. I still felt like I wasn't good enough. I had no clue who George was. So I rushed into life, like at 27, because I felt lost, didn't know what a man was supposed to do still. I got an MBA, rushed into a family, and let life just go so fast without taking time to get to know George. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important for people listening here is that no matter what you're doing in life, you have to take your time to give yourself, to get to know yourself more, right? Because I did this. I checked off the boxes of life thinking that I had to get married, do all the things. And then in the end, after creating a beautiful family, I was miserable. My ex-wife was miserable. We got a divorce. And because I attached myself more to achievements, outcomes, relationships, financial status, et cetera, when that all came crashing down, I came crashing down with it and found myself at an empty parking lot, almost ready to take my life. Mm. And so that's where Nowhere to Go came from. I kind of pulled myself back out, realizing there really is no place in this world for us. And the same result for me, you, and everybody else is death in the end. So what are we really chasing? Right. Mm-hmm. And so that brings me here today on this podcast with you.
Wow. Okay. Lots to unpackage there. I would like to understand, what was it about the divorce at 6 years old? Can you narrow in on what it was that made you not feel like you were enough? And I'm asking this question for two reasons. One, I think a lot of us can relate to the not being enough, but then a lot of us are divorced and we have little kids. Mm-hmm. And so we're always worried about, are we doing the right thing, and the guilt, and like, how is this damaging our kids, right?
Sure.
So can you kind of go back in time and understand, like, where was that place of not feeling like you were enough?
Yeah, I mean, I was just caught up in the middle of it. And I don't think my parents realized, like, their actions affected us kids as well, right? So, like, my dad, obviously, like, that doing, telling me to be a man at 6 years old, like, I can understand now as my father's passing, he's dying from cancer, he's in the hospital, like, kind of understand like where he was coming from, but there could have been different ways to talk about a kid through divorce versus just like grow up and be a man, right?
Yeah.
Like, so like he reflected exactly what he had learned and it came onto him and was it his best possibly, but it hurt me really bad deep inside because I had no clue what that meant. So he didn't guide me to be a man. He just told me to work hard and be a man, which obviously got me here today because I went, you know, through the hard work ethic and stuff, but I didn't need that at 6 years old. What I needed is love and guidance and play and just being able to be a boy without no judgment or expectations, right? And so come back into your question, I have a six-year-old daughter and two different families. She has her mom's side and they're a big family, lovey-dovey. And then she also has like stepdad and little brothers and stuff like that. I'm single dad over here. So what I try to do is, one, we're co-parenting very well because we don't let our past get caught up in the middle of her. And two, I know that no matter what I do, like I'm going to influence her some way. So it is what it is. But I do believe that I'm doing my best with what I have, right? And so I communicate with her, I do things, and I try to make sure that she doesn't see that there's no use of life if she attaches her story to something, right? So she can have two families and not be considered messed up in the world or not can be considered a damage or things like that. So that's what we try to do as parents to make sure that she doesn't get caught up in it. I think we do a great job.
Yeah. So I think what happened was, and I talk about pretty much almost every episode, I'm talking about our childhood of somewhere because that's what shapes us. That shapes this adapted version of us, right? So your authentic self being this innocent, spontaneous little boy that just got kind of taken from you. And so then you were had this marching order of being a man at 6 years old. So your authentic self right then was removed or taken or telling you that that wasn't enough. You have to be a man. So now you're 6 years old trying to figure out how to be a man and you don't even have the tools to do that. So I can see it's kind of like a never ending quest. And it's interesting, you know, you're just kind of searching and going and then you're, oh, well, I bet the military is going to make you be a man. And then you did all this manly stuff and you still came out of that experience down and out. So when you were in that moment, when you were in the parking lot, I'd love to understand because I've had that moment too. And that's so important to share with people of what were you thinking and then what made you not do it? What was there some kind of divine intervention? Was there this connect? What were you thinking and what kind of helped you do that?
For sure. So I was thinking that with the amount of shame that I had and the amount of pain that I had with everything, like it was too shameful to move on. And the best way that I thought, because I was a warrior, was just to end my life. Like, why put anybody else through the pain, through the shame that I was feeling? And if I had felt this, I felt alone, you know, if I just ended everything, then no one else could deal with that. Right. That was one thought, like the amount of shame, the amount of pain, all the stuff.
What was the shame? What were you thinking?
Shameful for the divorce, shameful for things that happened, shameful for the way I was, all the things that didn't make me feel good enough. Right. Mm-hmm. So seeing that divorce happen, like my own, reflected of what I saw as a childhood. And so it just kind of was a clash, even though I know that's not true. But at the time I wasn't seeing therapy or anything. And so that was what I was thinking there. And I had just gone through a host of dark times. I mean, I was drinking, I was doing a lot of bad things in that moment. So that was just like the topple effect, right? Basically repressed everything until there was nowhere else to go, literally. And then at the moment, I don't know what saved me, because I literally had a gun in my mouth to my head. But my body froze, everything turned numb, and I couldn't pull the trigger. And I'd pulled the trigger thousands of times as a Marine. I thought I was dead because of the way that I was feeling. And I opened my eyes and there's just tears and everything. And my body was just like frozen in time. There's a picture that's still in my car of my daughter and myself that saved it. So I think I have this little tattoo on my wrist. It's a heart semicolon. Basically, love almost took my life, but love also saved my life. Therefore, I chose to continue the chapter of love on through my daughter. And I believe that's what really kind of like saved me in the moment, is that love for my daughter and the love that she had for me, realizing like there's no way she could go on without me in her life. And so I called a bunch of friends at the moment. One person picked up. He's still my really good friend. He talked me out of it. I got some help. And here I am 3.5 years later, sober, writing, and just helping others do the same.
Interesting. So what was the journey that you took in order to have peace with your family, your childhood, and to get to where you are?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's still in process, like all of us, but, you know, I joined a lot of men's work. I did a lot of therapy. I took a lot of personal retreats. I cut out all the distractions and, you know, in times of hardship, one big event that's still happening in my life is my dad's currently passing of cancer. He's in the hospital. And so it really allowed our family to get closer. And at the same time, I was going through some stuff. So I would open up more with my family. And we just connected a little bit more, realizing like, okay, dad is dying. Things are happening. George is doing this, X, Y, Z. And we just kind of started getting close over the time. But personally, I just had to, like, writing the book was a cathartic experience and a freeing experience in the own terms of what I went through. And then that allowed me to connect better with my family. But having men's group and therapy and support that I never had before has really allowed me to stay strong through it all.
Sure. Do you see your father differently now?
I have forgiven him for what has happened, and I've told him that. And, you know, I spend time with him all the time in the hospital, like almost every day. And so, yeah, I see him a little differently. I don't see him as like this person that did something I hate. I just like, hey, I've forgiven you. You know, this is your path now. Like, I'm where I am. Parts of because of you, but also because of all the work I've done.
Yeah. What advice could you give to someone? Because there's a lot of people that I work with whose families has really caused them harm, that kind of got them to where they are. I'd say a good chunk of those who get divorced are going into the relationship to heal their past. And then they realize that no person can heal their past, right? Mm-hmm. Not even having children can heal your past. You have to do that work. So there's this recognition, and that's why I love looking at breakups and divorce, because that's where we have our biggest breakthroughs. And that's exactly what you did, right? That's, you went through that divorce and you're at your lowest point, but then somewhere you had a breakthrough, right? Mm-hmm. So what advice could you give to someone who is at that nowhere to go place? Is there a step process, or what's the first thing that they should do?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a step by step, honestly, because each of us are unique, right? So like my process is completely different, which that's why I say it's so important to wherever you're at in life to just close your eyes, take a few deep breaths, and just be able to feel firstly, like whatever it is that you're feeling, because you really can't go where you want to go or become who you want to become if you can't feel. Right? That's a massive process. Like, I know for a lot of men and myself, like feeling and emotions are really hard to process and deal with, even as even women, all adults, right? So give yourself permission to like create that space and just feel first, like, are you feeling angry, sad, whatever? And then obviously get help you know, whether it's women's work, men's work, therapists, coaches, whatever it is. And then ask yourself truly, like, what are you running from? You know, like, you have to be able to accept all of your story to be able to move into the future with strength, optimism, dignity, and become the best version of yourself, right? Because if, now, acceptance doesn't mean like you have to forgive, right? Because forgiveness might not be in your cards, and that's okay, but acceptance can be in your cards. There's a difference between forgiveness and acceptance, right?
Yeah. You know, I talk a lot on this podcast about the relationship with my father, and I feel like one of us always has, we have a relationship issues with mom, issues with dad, yeah. Or it could even be both, but the relationship I had with my father, and it hit me maybe a few years ago. I mean, not, we're talking just a few years ago, where I recognized that I have been wanting a relationship with a guy who actually doesn't exist. He's physically there, and sure. I have a relationship with him, but I felt as though I was chasing him to be someone that he isn't. And so every time I'd be on the phone with him, or every, you know, Thanksgiving or whatever time I was going down to visit him, I was getting triggered because subconsciously I wanted this man to be someone that he wasn't, which was a loving, doting father. And he is loving in his own way. He's definitely not doting. I can't even say that. But and then I realized that my entire life has been spent chasing this man. And because I couldn't get him, I was chasing this kind of guy through other men, through other relationships. And I'm, you know, this is what we do. We pick people who, romantic partners, who represent the parent that wounded us the most, so that we can make peace with that person. And I was, and so, you know, I've always had this kind of working book title. I'll probably never do it, but it's kind of like chasing the ghost of our parents. It's like almost as though, you know, these people don't exist. So I actually had to accept, oh my gosh, this is the man who's been my father my whole life.
Yeah.
And I actually wrote this odd goodbye letter to the man that I've always wanted, father-wise. And it was really, no one told me to do it. I just kind of felt called to do this exercise. And it was a really, really painful letter, but it was really, really cathartic. Something happened there where I was like, oh, okay. And so now I'm able to see this man for what he is. And, you know, all parents, they have no intention of going into parenthood going, I'm going to be a shitty parent.
No.
Right? They do the best with what has been taught them. So I'm curious as to, were you able to do that and accept this man for who he is?
So I never wrote him a letter. I mean, I think writing the book was a letter, because there's the last section in my book is called The Last Breath. And I talk about how he informed our family of his dying of cancer, and he held it in for the longest time. And so when he informed that, like, I had to take a step back and realize, like, there's this author and men's work guy, he says, David Data, he says, like, men need to be able to live without their expectations of their father, right? As if their father was already dead. And when a man can do that, he can live freely and authentically. And so here I am in this process of like, oh, okay, my dad actually is dying. Like, this is my own chance to like forgive him and step into him and have a conversation. My dad is still very stubborn at 74 and he's dying. He doesn't say, I love you. Doesn't do all these things, but I see him cry now because he's doing the things. And I've learned to accept that. I'm going to spend time with him because it's going to make my soul better, right? And his soul. So in that process of living free of his expectations, I wrote in my book what it meant to live free without expectations and things like that. And for me, that was very healing because I realized I can be who George needs to be without being pigeonholed in a box. And right now, you know, for me in my life, I'm 38, you know, I'm an author and I'm creating. I've actually transitioned away from being a coach. I've been a coach for 10 years of my life. And recently writing and hanging out with really good friends and people in different work networks, like I've become a copywriter, direct response copywriter, because I'm really good at words and helping people get their words better.
Interesting.
And in that process, like, it's felt good. Like, I'm happier, I'm freer, like, I met a lot of great people, and like, I have no expectation that I need to be XYZ anymore, coach, mentor, MBA, whatever it is. And it's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I think it, you know, I'm 10 years older than you. And so I really felt as though I was starting to really become aware of who I was in my late 30s. And and then I felt like, you know, when I got into my 40s, I was really starting to sharpen the pencil, like really get fine-tuned of what it is. And so it's, I just think if I could go back to relive my 30s, I would, because I always thought that was a really good decade. I mean, it was painful as crap, right? A lot of things happened, but I really feel as though that's when you start to get to know the true self.
Yeah, Robert Bly, he's a men's activist and really good poet. He basically, in his book, there's a book called Iron John to Be a Man, Iron John. And he talks about like the development of men through phases. And there's a section in there where he says like men at some point in their lives, like women probably have some kind of other thing, but I don't know much about women because I'm a man. So I know of men. He says like men in their mid 30s, maybe early 40s, go through this point, what's called a catabasis. And it's like an abrupt fall from status, right? It can come in many different ways. It doesn't have to be as like demanding as mine. It could be a loss of a career, loss of job, loss of relative, whatever. It forces you to change yourself. And in that process, you basically have to sit with everything that you thought to know be true about life. It's no longer true. And you have to challenge yourself to grow. And if you don't challenge yourself to grow, it will continue to repeat in different patterns. And through the catabasis, men learn to what's called walk through the ashes of life. They learn to sit with what makes them painful, the grief, the sorrow, the heartbreak, all the challenges. And then you start to grow through roots of the ashes into the man that you were born to become, right? And it's very, it's a powerful thing for me because I've learned like, okay, like this is the process. I need to sit with the grief and the sorrows from childhood, from the Marine Corps and all the things that made me get here, which I was running from. Now I don't run from them. And it's painful still, by the way, anybody who's listening, like pain is a gift. It's teaching you something, right? And all that has allowed me to be here to speak to you in the podcast, to write the book. I'm writing a second book. I'm traveling the world. I'm doing all these cool things. And it's awesome. Mm.
So really without your pain, it sounds as though you really wouldn't have this kind of success.
Right. So success is just like a thing right out there. But yeah, pain is inevitable, right? And so we have to learn that transitions just like pain are inevitable. They're coming to our lives for a reason. I always tell people, I wrote a poem when I did a vision fast in the desert last year. Basically, emotions come into our lives for a reason, right? They're messengers sent to guide us from darkness to light. And we have to allow them to come in without judgment or shame or expectations and just learn to sit with them and process them and let them do what they need to do, right?
Yeah. And I want to go back to something you said about, you know, just growing up was difficult and you had the kind of the drugs and alcohol and just not barely being able to finish high school. And then you try to get into college or you think about it. And then there was this military and you couldn't get in all this stuff. And then you got out. And the way in which you described your story is what I call the notion or the pain or the frustration of what I call this word. I call it linear order and how we are expected to just go down this one path.
Right.
And that truly is a cultural systematic problem. Where we never, I mean, I look at my kids who have gone, you know, I've got one in college and the other one in high, like going to a senior year. And I just look at how they've been taught and they're buying the Kool-Aid as well. And it drives me crazy watching this because they think I'm a little wacky, like, Mom, what are you talking about?
Sure.
But it's just this notion of just this, you have one linear path. You don't, you know, even now in high school, my kids, you know, they go to, you know, they're in a STEM school. And so they're pushing math and engineering. I'm like, what if they could be doing other things. There's other interests, there's arts. And so we're forcing our children and we were forced to go down this linear path. And I think for so many of us, you know, the next step is, you know, you graduate or get your thing done and then you're all right, let's have kids. And
yeah.
And then I remember that too, like around 30, I was like, okay, I've checked all of these boxes. Why do I feel so unhappy? And I didn't feel as though I was really taught the ability to have a lot of options, right?
Right.
And it's this linear path. And what I love what you did is you went through that linear path and you were like, well, now what? Where do I go now? And that pain gave you, I think, you tell me if I'm right, the pain gave you permission to start exploring a non-linear way of looking at life and living life.
Yeah. And the pain never goes away. Like, and also for people, for your audience, right? Like, just know that, like, it really is a gift because it's like my mentor, he says, there's wisdom in the garden of your wounds.
I love that.
And so you can explore that option wherever you may take with it, right? And so, yes, acceptance of the pain has allowed me to be here. And I say, like, it, you said the exact same thing. I say it in a different way. I say, life is this magnificent dance that allows us to be more than we could ever imagine, but only if we accept who we are, right?
Only if we accept who we are. I think that's so, it sounds so simple, but it's so, I think that's the kind of the crux.
It's not easy. And no, but it's, here's another reframe I like to think, right? Like, it's only as easy or difficult as you want to make it, right? When you say it's not easy, why isn't it easy? Where is the resistance coming from? What are you afraid to let go of? Who are you afraid to become, right? You got to start to dig deeper than the surface. We often seek answers, but what we really, I believe that we really need to seek more questions.
I think that's a really, really good point. And here's the thing though. I always like to challenge just like everything my guests say. I always, because sure. I'm like trying to, yeah. I'm trying to come in from a listener's perspective. If they can't ask this question, I try to ask the question. So if I were to say, okay, George, I need to accept who I am, but who am I?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's the question you want to be asking for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Every single day you wake up. And if you stop asking that question, you're in trouble.
Yeah. So I believe that through childhood trauma, life events growing up, that who we really are, we are told that who we really are isn't good enough in some way, right?
For sure.
And then we adapt to being someone who we think our parents want us to be. Because if, especially if it's a, you know, a real old school kind of parent, there's a lot of probably narcissism of some sort. I'm not saying that the parent has to be a full-blown narcissist, but a lot of the parents will only look at and accept a child if, because they see themselves as the child are an extension of me, the parent.
Right.
And you're not allowed to have any individuality. And if you do, if you're someone so different than me, then that produces fear within me as a parent that I've done something wrong, right?
Sure.
So that's the way I think this shift happens in childhood, which can be quite destructive. And so much of the work that I do as a coach and the work that I do in my podcast is to try to get everyone to understand who their authentic being is and to recognize that these life events created adaptations within us, adapting to be someone that we're actually not. And so here we are. And I always find it's like, I get a lot of clients who are I really think it's like the mid-30s is when you start to really ask who the hell you are. And if you're, I really want to encourage, because I love that what you said, keep asking that question, because so many people will go, I don't know who I am. So they get even more depressed. Or they'll go back and engage themselves in the exact same behavior and they'll date the exact same person or fall right in line with the exact same problem. And it just keeps perpetuating itself. And so for me, somewhere along the lines of my age, I've started to just accept, well, maybe I'm someone completely different than what my father wanted me to be.
Right.
And it's scary.
It is scary.
It actually scares the shit out of me sometimes.
Me too. I think like you said, a lot of us, like, okay, we are afraid of that unknown, which is part of being human, right? But when that fear comes up, I think there's a difference between letting that fear control who you are or letting that fear kind of like simmer and be like, okay, there's something else here a little bit deeper, right? And we can never actually fully understand who we are if we never give ourselves permission to trust the unknown. If we are used to chasing identities, achievements, outcomes, successes, relationships, whatever, then we're never going to be our true self.
Yeah.
Because in the space of life, the space between like what was and who we will be is who we are. It's which we are right now. And so the only way to find that out is to give yourself more space in life. So if you're someone who is go, 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 which is a lot of us, right? If you never give yourself 10 or 15 minutes a day or time to take a walk or to get away and detach from things, like you will never be able to know who you are. And I get it. There might be some parents out here listening and say, I got three kids and I'm doing all these things. Great. You're doing all these things. I understand you have to provide for family. But how's that working for you? Right?
Right.
It's not. And so do you see yourself as a priority? And why aren't you a priority in your life? Because you cannot take care of your kids fully if you can't take care of yourself as well. Mm-hmm. And if you try to, eventually you'll burn out and crash, get sick, and all the things that happen. I was a fitness coach for 10 years. I was in the Marines. Like, I understand burnout more than anybody.
Yeah. What is your process for trusting the unknown?
Okay. Yeah, that's a good, great question. Thank you for asking. So I give myself space in the morning to do exactly that. So whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, it doesn't matter. I have what's called a wedge, which another one of my mentors. So a minimum expectation and a large expectation. Let's say it's 15 minutes. So in the morning, put my feet on the ground. I thank God, thank earth, whatever. I'm alive. Thank you very much for another day.
So gratitude.
Gratitude for sure. Like appreciation for life. Like really just feel it. Like I feel it. Like I get emotional because I almost took my life. And so I feel my feet on the ground. And then I get up and I just hydrate water because it feels good to drink water. And then I sit down and meditate for, 5 to 10 minutes, depending on what. No thoughts, no hip note, whatever. Just let them come and go. Whatever comes, it's a thought, whatever. And then I journal on any of those crazy thoughts that come up. So I do, it's called like an open loop in my mind when I'm meditating, and I close the loop in my journal. So, that sucked. Like, okay, I don't like that feeling. Like, why'd that come up? And so those are how I connect with myself in the morning to create space. And then I also train my body to like extremes. Not everyone has to train their body to extremes, but I like to. So I like to go on crazy hikes. I like to go on runs. I like to lift. I like to do jiu-jitsu, all these things that challenge who I am, that keep me grounded as a man. And they allow me to really stay centered. Those are some of my best practices.
That's funny. I almost do the exact same thing, except for the challenging myself physically. I don't do that.
Sure. You don't have to.
I wish I did, but I don't.
Yeah. No, I mean, you can have an edge. Like, speaking of that, it's actually a great thing to bring up, because an edge in life doesn't have to be physically challenging. Mm. It can be in your relationships. It can be in your career, right? It just can be anything that gets you just a little bit more, right? Just a little bit more.
Yeah. Okay. So then I can definitely relate to that, because that's where, with what I do, I'm always wanting to take a risk. I want to stretch myself a little bit more. How can I do things differently work-wise? What, if I start to feel bored, that's a red flag for me. I have to stretch myself. And I really love what you said about, I just want to make that point about meditating is really, so many people think like they have to just, talk with God or have this process. And that's why I asked you what your process was, because it is really just thinking about nothing. There is no agenda. And then almost standing outside yourself and monitoring your thoughts. I do the exact same thing. And I'm looking for ego. So I have this vision of just another person, mm-hmm. in my mind, which is me, but she's ego. And so I try to separate ego from, which is fear, right? And then understanding, okay, what's the authentic self, which is your divine self, your highest self, your sure. most beautiful self. And same thing, I'll close the loop and do the same thing and write all of those things down. I'll talk back to some of those things, the negative aspects of life. And so when we are in this process of sitting still and getting to know who this authentic being is, I really want to encourage everyone to take that time, because here's what happens. It was about, the question I asked you was about trusting yourself, how to trust the unknown. That's what it was, how to trust the unknown. And so I find, and I don't know if you're doing the same thing, but that pain that that you said that never goes away, that manifests itself and wears a cloak and changes itself. It's almost as though there's this pain that turns into something else, which is often fear, right? So we've got pain of our past, and then it turns into, so for instance, I'm about to take a risk. Let's just say that. Mm-hmm. I'm about to take a risk. And then, well, I need to know all the answers, because when I grew up, I never knew the answers.
Sure.
And so that pain will just continue to manifest itself. And so for me, accepting the unknown is probably one of my biggest challenges, right? Because as a kid, when I was going through some bad stuff, that didn't feel good.
No, it doesn't.
Because we never were taught, we never had the right parenting of, hey, baby, it's okay. You're safe, right? So for me, when I have to accept the unknown, I am often said, or I often have to tell myself, it's okay to not know. Mm-hmm. It's okay to not know. I don't need to know right now.
Sure.
Right? I don't know if you go through the same thing of just like wanting to, because you're such a go-getter and I am too. And you're very accomplished. So oftentimes we're just like, I have to know.
Yeah.
I have to be in control.
I think it comes down to, you know, ultimately experiences in your life as well, right? So if you've never gone through really hard times, it's going to be even more difficult to accept the unknown. But the more that you challenge yourself in something, whether it's career, relationships, whatever, the more that you cultivate in a skill and awareness of who you are and appreciation for life to be able to trust more. Okay, so this is like the first year of my life, like even after going through all the stuff that I shared earlier, that I'm really leaning in hard. Like I went to the desert last year for 4 days by myself and fasted on a cliff. Like I've done all these things to learn who I was. You don't need to do that. But what I'm saying is if you've never gone through some hardships or really challenged yourself like in that way, then it's really hard to trust the unknown. So if someone listening today is like, okay, like I can't trust, I can't do this. First, slow your roll. Your words are things, right? Like you can trust, you just have to give yourself an experience and time and things like that. Get some help and then take time out of your life. Take 30 minutes, 60 minutes, whatever it is, 5 minutes away from social media, away from detoxes, whatever it is. And just sit with yourself and see what happens, yeah. See what comes up.
Yeah.
And the more anxiety, the more the stuff, it's okay. It's like ocean in a wave, right? Or the clouds in the sky. It will break, right? It will. So you have to sit there long enough to trust yourself. And that carries over to a lot. And again, not everybody likes to meditate. Cool. Meditation does not have to be sitting like that.
Yeah.
If you like to water your grass, you can water your grass and meditate. Sit there, water your grass. And let whatever comes. You can mow your lawn. You could do whatever.
I pull weeds.
Yeah, exactly. You can do anything. Now, I just want to mind you, right? Consider busy work, but just notice like, okay, when you're doing that, are you trying to avoid what you're exactly. feeling? Or like, are you sitting it, right? So just understand that. And that comes with that. So it all comes down to, like you said, experiences in life. The more you put yourself through difficult times, the more that the pain disseminates because you're learning more about yourself.
Yeah.
That's why it comes down to, for me, like challenges, right? I like to challenge myself because that's how I find out who I am.
Yeah. And as you said, pain is a gift. The more we have, the more we learn and the more we grow and evolve and become our best version of ourselves. George, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been really great talking to you. I would love to like see where you are 5 years from now. you're going places. It's really cool to see. And thank you for sharing your story and hopefully inspiring others.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. If anybody on the show is listening, you can reach out to me. I'll give you a digital copy of the book for free. It's obviously available everywhere. But like, yeah, if you want a copy, just send me a DM on Instagram and I'll send it your way.
And I will put those links in the show notes to reach out to George, and I'll also put your website. Thank you, George.
Thank you very much. This was a blast.
Thanks for listening. If you haven't already, make sure you sign up for your free subscription to Blessings of a Breakup, where you will receive daily spiritual guidance on getting out of your pain and back to who you really are. Go to my website at lindsayellison.com.